Well, here we are for our round table. And I mentioned that we were going to be super helpful and upbeat and positive for Valentine's Day as a show that's primarily for single people. And today's no exception. So we have got Tanera, Glenn, and MT here. Hey, everyone.
Hey.
Howdy.
Great to have you. Okay. Well, Glenn and MT are actually married, not to each other, but they are now married, not single.
Good clarification.
But we, yes. But we know that you guys have great things to add because you are counselors and you, I know MT, you were single for a long time.
Yeah, till almost 39.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that gives you, it's like almost like
plenty of road travel.
We're getting plenty of road traveled. Okay. Well, let's kind of dive into this because we want to talk about how to do the single life well. And that's a very broad topic and it could go a number of different directions. But, you know, I think there's a lot of assumption out there that, you know, and I've talked about this a lot and, you know, I'm always trying to kind of, I think, ride the line on this or be like, no, don't believe it. Don't believe it. This idea that life begins at marriage and singleness is this waiting room for marriage where you just try to like improve yourself so that someone will eventually want you and then you can get married and start your real life. And it's sad because so many single adults still believe that, I think. And I think that it's kind of, you know, as we're in churches and stuff, we see churches that are programmed for families and marriage is a great thing. Family is a great thing. And most single people will be married at some point in their lives. So it's like, awesome. You know, let's do it, especially if marriage is for you. But there's also a great season to be lived in singleness. And so, in fact, I know like Glenn and MT, you even in counseling get a fair number of calls from singles as well as parents of single young adults who are kind of like trying to navigate maybe some of the unique challenges of adulthood and singleness. And maybe a lot of parents who are like, why isn't my dear boy married yet? And what am I going to do about him? How can I fix him and this problem?
I give MT those calls.
Well, as if our salvation somehow comes through being married. And I think that was the thing that I was most frustrated with as a single adult, was that that seemed to be the coup de grace within the church, was somehow if I could just get there, you know, and then all of a sudden people get married and then they have these problems. And well, what do you do then?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't solve it.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like I got to a certain point, you know, and I've told people this on the show where I felt like my 20s, I was just trying to like hold my life together and even get a job that would pay the bills and whatever. And then my 30s, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm still single. So I was like desperate trying to make up for lost time and just dating a bunch of people. And then I kind of settled into, you know, there's actually a lot of good things about singleness and still open to marriage and stuff like that. But, I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, Tanera, you and I are single. Did you walk through similar stages or did you have or have you always just been kind of chill like, no, I've got this?
Oh, gosh, have I walked through my stages? I mean, absolutely. I mean, my whole goal in high school was to get married and have babies, you know. And I remember, too, when I was on the cusp of turning 30 and I had this major freak out of like, oh, my gosh, I'm about to be 30 and not married. And I come from the South where if you're not married at 18, something's wrong with you. And so I definitely had my phases of walking through and learning to be confident and comfortable in who I am and realizing, like you said earlier, you know, so many times I grew up feeling that same way that singleness was a waiting room for marriage. And like I wasn't chosen yet because I wasn't good enough yet. And I still had to keep working on myself. But I think as you get older and you start seeing 18-year-olds get married, you realize that's not the case. And so, yeah, it was definitely a process for me to get to a place of being comfortable with myself and liking myself and enjoying me and my life that I have now.
Yeah. Glenn and MT, what did your single years look like for you? I mean, what was unique about them? What was difficult? What was more assumptive as far as how you walked that road?
I had the impression that I would be married probably by age 21, not too different from Tanera, maybe a few years older. But I got married at 31. And so single life was there. I was busy with grad school. I was in Southern California for that. When I came back from Southern California, I started a counseling center at our church. So there were a number of things that I was involved in. But one of the things that I tried to do, and I realized, you know, you can have a goal for something. It's easier to set the goal than to fully meet it. But that was where there would be wholeness within who I was. I mean, I had a strong desire for marriage. I remember as a kid thinking about marriage. I don't know, I was 10, 12, 14 years old, and I would just think about it. It would be part of my daydream. but wanted it to be one that was going to be a godly relationship. And so I think I did take steps and made efforts to try to grow as I could, to be as whole as I could be, you know, still with the understanding that that desire for marriage was something that I felt God had placed within me. Mm-hmm. But to, you know, just look at wholeness as something that was true. It wasn't about two halves finding each other. Mm-hmm. It was about being whole as an individual. Right. Finding another whole person can then allow marriage to, I think, be much more constructive and likely to be happy, mm-hmm. content, than if you have two people who are looking for that other person to make them whole. That's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, it's as far as my story, I had different phases. I really wasn't a very mature single adult in my masculinity. Like I was a mature person just intellectually and friendships and whatnot. But in terms of, I always knew I theoretically wanted to be married, mm-hmm. but it wasn't something high on my radar in my 20s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was college and then it was moving out and being on my own. And then I realized I wanted to go to grad school. And by the time that was done, you know, that was somewhere in my late 20s. And so it really wasn't until my early 30s where I started really beginning to say, okay, I theoretically want to be married and I actually want to be married. Wait a minute. I'm not ready to be married. I'm not mature enough, selfless enough. And I started to have to do my own work, mm-hmm. you know, to try to understand that. And so I realized that rather than just hanging out with single people, which is what I always did, have fun, mm-hmm. do the thing, you know, I realized I need to start hanging out with married people, mm-hmm. to understand what that even looks like. Right. Like, what does a selfless husband even look like? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, my single buddies, they're not modeling that for me.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, so yeah. So that's what I started doing is I started, and then the church where I was, it was kind of funny. There was a church on one side of the street and they owned the building on the other side of the street where the singles met. Metaphorically, mm-hmm. there was this divide, mm-hmm. you know. So I literally had to cross the street, yeah. to go hang out with the married folks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gratefully, there were some married couples that allowed me to kind of do life with them so I could actually see what a healthy yet still broken marriage looked like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, a healthy enough marriage, yeah. Yeah. that could model for me, oh, that's what that looks like. Okay. Oh, that's what I'm going to have to give up in order to get that good thing. I have to give up this good thing as a single.
Yeah. What's a good balance between, because I feel like a lot of singles are either, yeah, you know, okay, I'm okay with being single. Okay, but not really. But, you know, as long as God doesn't make me single more than 5 years more, you know, or whatever. They have their little timelines. But then the opposite extreme is like almost this militant, like single is the best and we're awesome and we're going to mm-hmm. be, how can we find a happy medium where we really are open-handed about marriage, but at the same time recognizing mm-hmm. a lot of the benefits of singleness?
Yeah. I know for me, and a lot of finding that balance in my life is I used to be a bit militant with the singleness is awesome, but for me it came from a place of hurt. Mm-hmm. It was that place of I was so afraid I would never get chosen that it was, well, I just love my life as is. I'm okay. I don't need anybody. But it was having to come to that balance of like, I want someone in my life, right? And so getting to a place to say, you know what, I am worthy, I am acceptable, I am good, just because I haven't met them yet doesn't mean that I'm not, right? And so for me, being able to get to a place to say, I'm open to it, I'm holding it with an open hand, if that makes sense. So being able to say, this is a desire that I have, the Lord has placed in me, and it is something that I want. And yes, there are steps I make to still in my life improve me because we're to grow to be more like Christ, period, right? Mm-hmm. But still in that process, being able to say, okay, Lord, I'm still entrusting this to you and I'm keeping it open handed because I'm going to let it look how you want it to look, not how I determine I want it to look. Mm-hmm. And I think especially as women, maybe we kind of struggle with putting these timelines on the Lord and being like, God, I don't want to be single past this age. Like, I want to be married by the time I'm 30. One of my goals totally missed it. So, mm-hmm. but there mm-hmm. comes an aspect where if you decide, man, I want the right person and I don't want to just go marry anybody, then you do have to hold it with an open hand and say, you know, I'm willing to wait for the right one and I'm willing to continue and walk in the calling that I have and develop that. But I'm going to hold it with an open hand mm-hmm. to allow God's timing to take place instead of my own, because mm-hmm. then that's where we get one of those Ishmael experiences.
Good point.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, I think a lot of times if we base our identity upon our marital status. Am I single? Am I married? That's when I think you get the the militant either way, either that, you know, people have to be married to be content or they can't be married to be content. You know, if they realize that their wholeness is going to add to their life regardless. If they stay single, they're a whole person. If they share that with someone, there's some great joys with that, but you also have some greater challenges too. So each one has its own difficulties, but also they're great joys as well.
Mm-hmm. If I were to pick up on what Tanera said, because I would say the same thing you said, but in a, I'm just going to pick up on the metaphor. Holding it with an open hand, mm-hmm. okay, as opposed to the two extremes of clutching it mm-hmm. like there's no tomorrow, right. I'm going to pursue it like crazy, no matter mm-hmm. if it's a healthy person or not.
Right.
Or the other extreme where I'm like, what? I don't even want that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. both of those are areas of protectiveness. Mm-hmm. But to hold it with an open hand requires mm-hmm. grief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It requires sitting and being vulnerable with that desire, and it's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. And I think as single people, it's hard for us to do that mm-hmm. because then we're like, well, I don't want to sit around and have a pity party,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we, so many things in life, yeah. you have to go through the valley of the shadow
yeah. Yeah.
in order
right.
to get to the grassy tableland on the other side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that open, holding it with an open hand and grieving oftentimes is that place where people come and sit alongside us, come and give us support and strength and comfort. And I think sometimes the Holy Spirit comes there too, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And God oftentimes shows up in that place
yeah.
and provides for us.
That reminds me of another area of attitude that I want to bring up too, because again, you can be like, you know, again, thinking of the single people out there, you can be the most positive, the most trusting the Lord person in the world. But now let's talk about what do you do with all the people around you who think that somehow being single is not good enough? Because you're going to get it, mm-hmm. whether it's from people in your church, whether it's people in your family. It's kind of like and so much of it is out of good intention. You
right.
know, I want you to have what mm-hmm. I have. I have
right.
such a wonderful spouse. I, you know, right. your grandmother and I did, you know, that. And it's all good stuff.
Well-meaning.
It's all, you know, they're well-meaning and stuff. But at the same time, you're constantly feeling like a second-class citizen. Because you're on this doorstep of arrival mm-hmm. that they're hoping you to have or hoping you to be more like them in some way. How do we respond graciously and still maintain hope in the midst of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. how to respond graciously. I experience this a lot, as I'm sure a lot of singles do, where you have people come up and be like, oh, I just wish you were married. I just want you to experience this. Or they try to set you up with other people. And you're in that place where you're like, can you just let it be? Mm-hmm. I know in my experience, a lot of times whenever I have that encounter and I want to talk with them, I'll generally, depending on the level of my relationship with the person, if it's someone I'm more close to versus not, if I'm more close to them, a lot of times I'll even just share my heart and say, look, I am believing, and I believe that God has someone for me, and I believe in the right time it'll come. Until then, will you help protect me and my heart to keep me pursuing the Lord and not do these things, because they do pull me away from it? And I've noticed that when I come from the aspect of, you know, will you help protect me, as yeah. opposed to making it about them, you know, you stop doing this, it's more of, hey, this would help me, I find that they're very receptive to that. So I know in my life that's a lot of the verbiage I'll use when communicating about, you know, it would really help me if you could help protect me in this area. It's helped kind of lessen a lot of those comments.
And I think the affirmation of the fact that they do care mm-hmm. is real important. But, you know, sometimes you get, could be a relative, it could be a friend, you know, mm-hmm. for the 40th time they're saying the same thing. I mean, at some point, you know, it's not, I don't think we have to set everyone straight from the get-go, but sometimes if a person's been doing it for quite some time,
right.
it could be helpful to say, I understand and I appreciate the fact that you care about me. But I really do, as kind of Tanera mentioned, you know, God's got a hold of this, and I'm gonna be faithful. I'm gonna take positive steps. I'm gonna mm-hmm. be available to opportunities, mm-hmm. but I'm not gonna view my life as, until I get there, life hasn't started,
right.
because I have a full life right now.
Mm-hmm. I actually had to do that with a couple family members, because it kind of got to the point where it was like mm-hmm. it was almost me having to address with them, you're not trusting God with mm-hmm. this situation. You're
yeah,
so frantic
good.
On my behalf, and they were like, you know, have you been on all the online dating sites? Have mm-hmm. you been? They were just whipping themselves up into a frenzy about like thinking. Afraid that I'd given up, you know,
right.
and like, throw in the towel, Lisa, don't, you know, and so it's kind of hard to be mm-hmm. like, no, I want to live victoriously in this and mm-hmm. still be hopeful. But
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay. So another question here. I want to talk about singleness and like service and giving and all that. And I think another assumption that comes out there is that, you know, married people get a pass on like serving God and be, you know, and it's like, you're single, you can do all this because you don't have anything else going on. So not true. You right. guys, so don't even think that about us. But no, you guys don't think that. But I do want to say, too, and I'd love for us all to comment on this. I think there are some unique things about being single. And if we're not so busy defending ourselves on why we shouldn't have to work the nursery every week and lead Awana and be everyone's like caregiver or whatever, I think we really can lean into some unique opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about this the other day because everyone knows I was caregiver for my mom and it was an exhausting season. But now I just out of the blue, like through, I think, a God ordained appointment, have a 93-year-old friend who's super precious. She's sharp as a tack. She's still independent, but she's been lately needing some help because she was having back trouble. And I remember just driving back from her place the other day and thinking, I can do this. Like I can drop something after work or have time for her or whatever, because I'm not managing the schedules of four children and doing all that. And it was just kind of a unique way of God saying to me, Lisa, this is something that I have for you. And it's a mutually beneficial relationship. And I just realized this is something really neat that I have the privilege of doing and a friend that I have because of my single status. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
What comes to my mind is kind of an analogy of an ocean liner of some sort, where that could be compared to marriage in the sense it goes, but it's a little bit harder to turn around, and you can't just give it orders as quickly. Whereas maybe more of a smaller speedboat has a capacity to make quicker turns. And in some ways, a single life, there can be decisions that are made before both spouses get on board with what that decision is. So I think both have the great opportunity to serve the Lord. There's some aspects of marriage that together as husband and wife, a lot can be accomplished. We find that in scripture. Mm-hmm. But there's some things as singles where that ability to make those quick pivots, like you were mentioning, can occur.
Yeah.
When I was single, I taught my single adult Sunday school class at the church. Mm-hmm. And I would spend hours preparing for that on Saturday, you know, for Sunday morning. If I do that now, it would be considered selfish and an abdication of my responsibility, you know. And so, it again, they're both good. It's just different, you know. And I would be remiss if I didn't say I miss that kind of time to connect with the Lord. Mm-hmm. But unless I'm going to do it from 1 to 3 in the morning, it's not going to happen, you know.
Yeah. And just to pick up on what MT was saying there, you know, that's the greatness, I think, for me right now in my experience with my singleness is I do, like, I also lead a singles group at my house for young women. And just being able to have the benefit of investing in more things and having more time to invest in myself, like my personal growth is to a max this year than it's ever been before. But there's things that I can do intentionally because I don't have the commitment right now of marriage and children to invest in, but I have myself to invest in, and investing in that relationship with the Lord. Like, for example, I can lay on my bed with all of my books all over my bed, right? And then I can push them away when I go to sleep and bring them right back when I wake up.
That's
right?
Awesome.
When I get married and there's someone else in that bed,
I
can't
saw
do that,
that on
right?
Books are going to be on the floor.
I'm just saying, I love my books.
Right. I saw that on an episode of Hoarders, quite frankly, but that's okay. No, it is true, though. And it's neat because, again, it's not, you know, all the stuff we're saying isn't like, so just do this until, you know, the day when you get what you want and everything turns around and rainbows and unicorns are part of your life 24/7. Again, it's just kind of one of those things of you're going to have hardship as a single person.
Yep.
You're going to have great
Absolutely.
Things as a single person. And I just think it's fun because there are, you know, because I don't want single people to think like, okay, because you're single, you know, just exhaust yourself and whatever. I mean, I take fun vacations and I love doing that. And I have a lot of great friends and I get to go visit my family and stuff. But it is just neat to be able to invest in and be involved in so many things that I probably wouldn't have even heard about, you know, outside of, you know, connections with various other single friends or ministries I heard about and stuff. So I want to thank Tanera and Glenn and MT. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
You're very
Absolutely.
Welcome.